The following is a talk on the Nectar of Devotion by His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami, given on April 12, 1998, in Wicklow, Ireland.
When I was staying in Manu's house, I was coming out on Sundays when I didn't have a headache and giving a class in the temple on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when I would visit here before and stay for some time for writing, I used to have some class too, so I hope to revive something like that when I'm able to do it. And when you're available, to have some classes. Now, the day I moved here, I began reading the Nectar of Devotion, and I've read it many, many times. And I read it again. It took me about 20 days. I was reading it with a book a godbrother has written. It's not published, but it's got analysis of the Nectar of Devotion by looking at the Sanskrit of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. I'm going to speak a little bit about it this morning. I think most of you have read it. And I remember my first impressions of the Nectar Devotion. And I was aware that it was a very scientifically written book, in that it's the science of bhakti is analyzed and in many categories described. The subtitle is The Complete Science of Bhakti Yoga, Different Kinds of Ecstasies. And in one sense, it mostly consists of quotes from different shastras in support of the analysis of bhakti that Rupa Goswami is making. He quotes shastras, and also he tells pastimes of Krishna that are examples of whatever he's trying to show. And some of those pastimes we had never heard before, never read them in Srimad Bhagavatam, and they were quite wonderful. And pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the cowherd boys, many of them were in fact pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So over the years I tried to get a grasp on the different oceans and the different waves of the oceans, and I continue to try to get a grasp of it, but it can be rather academic if you're just memorizing lots of Sanskrit terms. And then I found what remains for me as most impressive are different sections that, regardless of what they're trying to prove, that they're examples of a vibhava, or this is an example of udipan in the rasa of conjugal or in the rasa of dasya, regardless of the context, there were just some instruction or some pastime that made an impression and was very helpful for spiritual life. So that's what I thought I would share today. Read a few of those that were like my favorites from the very beginning. And maybe you remember them too. Without any attempt to set the context of it or do any kind of overview of the Nectar of Devotion, which is it would be a very ambitious thing to do. So, but at least I'll tell you where I'm reading the different sections from. I'm reading one paragraph from the chapter about Dasya Rasa, the relationship with Krishna, in which the devotee thinks of himself as a servant and Krishna is the master. These are all personal, eternal relationships with Krishna. So, in Dasya, there are different kinds of ecstasies which are most appropriate for that relationship. And one is that when you're fixed up in serving Krishna, that he's my master, Prabhupada says, you become engaged exclusively in the service of the Lord, being attentive to carry out the orders of the Lord faithfully. The first symptom of anubhava in dasya, or engagement in a particular type of service, is exemplified by Daruka, a servant of Krishna who used to fan Krishna with a chamara, a bunch of hair. When he was engaged in such service, he was filled with ecstatic love, and the symptoms of ecstatic love became manifest in his body. But Daruka was so serious about his service that he checked all of these manifestations of ecstatic love and considered them hindrances to his engagement. He did not care very much for these manifestations, although they automatically developed. So I've always thought this was wonderful, and something that, not that you can immediately apply, but that you can keep in mind in your practice of devotional service. Even while reading Nectar of Devotion and hearing of all the different kinds of ecstasies, you may wonder, well, why don't I have ecstasies, or can I have ecstasies? Maybe I am having ecstasies. There's one category called sattvika bhav, asta sattvika bhav, eight kinds of ecstasy, like standing of hairs on end and tears coming and a changing of colors of the body, and so many different things happen because love of God is so gets so intense that the devotees involuntarily feel great joy, but it takes all kinds of manifestations in the body. So we may want to have some of these to confirm our devotional service, or just as a kind of hankering for bliss, relief from our material boredom or our material suffering and so on. So in the midst of all these considerations of ecstasy, here's a devotee who is getting plenty of ecstasy because he's Krishna's direct servant. So there's like two things. One is his service. He has a chamara whisk, and he's fanning Krishna. So there's an art to do that. Actually, there's the chamara, and then there's the peacock feather. They're different. The peacock feather is to create a breeze, and the chamara is to create a breeze, but it also can flick off flies. And I remember there's one occasion, and it's even on a tape, where Prabhupada was being... somebody was doing the chamara, and he wasn't being effective in any way. He was just making a show out of it, sincerely, just thinking, well, I must serve Prabhupada, and I must be very reverent, so I'll keep moving this chamara. But he forgot that it's supposed to have a function, too. And so Prabhupada said, you can... He said, you're doing that, but you're not doing anything. He says, you can touch the body. Because you can even touch the body and flick off a fly. So Daruka was engaged like that. And he was having ecstatic love. So we could imagine tears coming in the eyes, which would blur the vision. You couldn't see so well. And maybe hairs on end, and just being overcome. Whenever we have any of these, sometimes we have some kind of a emotional reaction, whatever it may be. It may not be a bona fide ecstasy in the advanced stage, but sometimes we get some emotion in Krishna consciousness, and we become very attentive to it. Oh, something's happening with me. I wonder if I should try to restrain this in front of the other devotees, or so on and so forth. We may be happy. But he thought, what is this? I cannot do my service nicely. So this shows the importance of being attentive to the service. Basically, we want to do the right thing. We want to do whatever is Krishna conscious. So we're not sure. Should I be trying to think of Krishna? Maybe it would be wrong if I get too much into my service itself, trying to cook. Is it kind of, so we're cooking. Is it coming out nicely? Or if you're trying to teach children, am I getting the message across? Whatever you're doing, construction work, you have to think and do it nice, or preach, kind of convince the people. You know, you concentrate on performing your service so that it comes out right. It shouldn't be late. It should be on time. It should be nice. So sometimes devotees wonder, should I concentrate on the service, or should I be trying to think of Krishna while I do the service? It's not a duality, one or the other. But here the emphasis is on the service. Because the thing is, service to whom? It's not for me. It is for me, ultimately, to purify me. But my consciousness is, it's for Krishna, to please Krishna by doing this thing. Like if you do kirtan, it's not to please you, it's not to please a crowd, it's to please Krishna. If you're cooking on the altar, it's to please Krishna. To please Krishna's senses. So this is really a very advanced stage. Whenever I even hear it, I think, how is that possible? Sometimes it doesn't even sound attractive. Why should I have to give up my pleasure entirely, and I'm just serving Krishna? It's so demanding. Please Krishna's senses with your senses. You don't get any sense pleasure. That's not for you. It's for Krishna. He's the enjoyer. You're not constitutionally, you're not an enjoyer. You're to be enjoyed by Krishna. It sounds so complete. Although it may be the goal and desirable, it seems so impossible. But though it may be impossible, we should at least try to find some element of that in our service and try to increase it. It's good. So here's how. There's one way you can do it, is to not be concerned about your own ecstasy, but be like Daruka, Krishna's servant, and be concerned to do the service nicely. Well, that was my first excerpt. If there's a couple of questions I could take. I have, when I pick four of them, I have. So, any questions about this example?
I think I heard it said before that, you know, if a devotee, say, watches a play or something, a drama of Krishna classes, yeah, and they're moved, you know, just even watching the story, following the story, they're moved, and maybe tears come to their eyes, or
yeah,
that's personal emotion.
Yeah, I think that's even in here.
I was thinking, everyday activities in Krishna consciousness, sometimes it may bring out emotions. But we know, at least I know, that at the very best I'm a mixed devotee. But can that be, can those be genuine spiritual emotions? Or?
Yeah, there's a section in Nectar of Devotion that talks about shadow and reflection of ecstasies. And the basic way it happens is that by associating with a devotee who is experiencing those symptoms, or who is a pure devotee, then you feel those too. You give the example of the play. Another example is that, say, somebody comes to a Hare Krishna festival, he just comes right out of the pub, and somehow or other he gets into the temple. And then the devotees who are really dedicating their lives to Krishna, they're doing a kirtan, and they're feeling some spiritual emotion. They're dancing and chanting, and saying "Jai Haribol, Haribol." And all of a sudden, he's doing it too. He's dancing. Let's say he's not mocking it. He gets into it and he starts dancing and chanting Hare Krishna. Hare. So that's some spiritual emotion. So you can even understand it psychologically that he's just he's gotten it from these people, and he was just simple, and he was open to it, and he's got the ecstasy that they have temporarily. And in a shadow sort of a way. So it's very good for that person that he gets it. There are different. That's one example of somebody coming cold out of non-devotional consciousness and getting it right away. And then what you say is like, even somebody who's practicing, he's not normally getting those emotions. Another point is, there are different kinds of people. And Rupa Goswami goes into this in an extremely technical way that I got lost along the way, but he talks about different kinds of hearts. There's a heart that's hard as shellac, and it's compared to a big city. And then there's a heart that's like a little town, and it's compared to butter. And the hearts melt down. And so some people, but to put it simply, some people are more emotional, and some people are not so emotional. So that would not necessarily be a sign of... advanced spiritual life, the person who cries first, because it's just that person has that tendency. That can be another reason why the emotions come quickly. And so, but I think they're all like they're either shadows or reflections or early symptoms. Like so many things, before they're developed, there can be some little sign of it, and it's a genuine thing, but it's just such a little sign that it really would have to be developed. Like we were looking at one of the boy's drawings, and I said he has architectural skill. He could become an architecture, render these drawings. So there's a little sign of some skill there, but it would have to be developed and developed and developed to really become good. But yes, we see something in the beginning, and it's something genuine. But it could never amount to anything if it's not followed up on. So, sure. And Prabhupada, he gave many lessons not to imitate emotions or try to have emotions, but when devotees had them, especially remember in the beginning, he would encourage devotees. That is very nice. That you, during the kirtan, you felt some emotion. But of course, the example I gave was not so much about the emotion, but about the relation of it to the service that we're doing, and how it can, even if it does come, how one mentality of the servant of the Lord was that he was more interested in the service. And that was nice. To always keep focus on some practical service.
Some devotees would, or even myself, be a tendency to maybe interpret that to mean that actually the kind of work now somehow the lighter part of mean that actually no, but we shouldn't be looking for ecstasy, we should just go ahead, do our service. Krishna will shower us later on, but for now we should just work.
Yeah.
Samadhi will come later.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't mean to introduce it with that idea, but it comes from the devotee himself that he's thinking like that. But emphasis could be overdone that the main thing is just to do some work, and we don't care about your spiritual development. That's not implied. That's not meant to be the instruction. Daruka was so serious about his service that he checked all of these manifestations of ecstatic love and considered them hindrances to his engagement. But they automatically developed anyway. There's a sentence in the Bhagavad Gita purport that in the beginning a devotee is attached to his service, and later he becomes attached in love with the Lord. So ultimately the service itself is like, there's example, you say, well, how did Krishna like Daruka's restraining his ecstasy and fanning? It doesn't say. But we know it's not like Krishna just wanted an expert fanner. There, as an example of devotees doing improper service because of so much ecstasy. You know, the gopis running out with their clothes in the wrong places, makeup in the wrong places, and was it Vidura served Krishna banana peels instead of the banana, and Krishna liked the service very much, because the devotees, he wasn't just looking, oh, you're having ecstasy, I'm glad to see you're having ecstasy, but the ecstasy meant that they were just, they were so much loving Krishna, and he appreciated their devotion. All right, let me look at another one now. This is under the category of, let's see, what's it called? Different listing of devotional principles. Yeah, I think it's within the 64 items of devotional service. One is called submission, which as we read it, we understand it means submitting different kinds of prayers to the Lord. So here's one kind of prayer. In Sanskrit, it's known as samprartanātmika. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement of submission and feeling by devotees praying to the Lord. My Lord, I know that young girls have natural affection for young boys, and that young boys have natural affection for young girls. I am praying at your lotus feet that my mind may become attracted unto you in the same spontaneous way. The example is very appropriate. When a young boy or girl sees a member of the opposite sex, there is a natural attraction. Without the need for any introduction, without any training, there is a natural attraction due to the sex impulse. This is a material example, but the devotee is praying that he may develop a similar spontaneous attachment for the Supreme Lord, free from any desire for profit and without any other cause. This natural attraction for the Lord is the perfectional stage of self-realization. The first edition of Nectar Devotion was printed by ISKCON Press in Boston, and I was the editor, not of Nectar Devotion text, but and for putting the book together, I did things like write a little jacket blurb and just things like that. So on the back, I wrote a little blurb, and I took that quote because I just thought it was wonderful and expressed somewhat the essence of the book, Nectar of Devotion. So it's a kind of prayer where I think is very appropriate for ourselves, a prayer of desiring to reach the spontaneous stage. So I'm not in the spontaneous stage, but I want to be, so I'm praying that that day could come. Well, how do I know what it is that I can pray for it? So this example is given by a devotee who's praying for the spontaneous stage. He said, well, I know how a girl and a man are attracted. It's so spontaneous, without any need for introduction or special training. So I would like to be attracted to you like that. The example doesn't specify that he wants to have a conjugal relationship with Krishna. That's a different thing. But that conjugal relationship in the material world is something within his experience, which he sees as spontaneous. So why can't I be attracted to God like that? With such a strong desire and without any prompting. This is a prayer or a wish. One of the topics in Nectar Devotion, there's... The different kinds of devotional service, they are sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And in the sadhana bhakti, the first category, there's two kinds. There's vaidhi sadhana bhakti and raganuga sadhana bhakti. And these are discussed. But the very first mention of the term raganuga in Nectar Devotion, it's mentioned in a general way by both Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada. And they refer to it as just being spontaneous rather than doing service out of fear or out of being forced, or just that it's your duty. And Prabhupada gives the example that in the morning, the student in the ashram, he doesn't want to get up, but the spiritual master tells him to get up, or they ring a bell or something. But he doesn't really want to get up. Nobody gets up out of that force or obligation. But then a stage is reached where he wants to get up. Get up means early, too, because devotees rise early, so it's a little hard. He wants to get up, he must get up, he feels, because he wants to go and see Krishna in the temple, and so he's enthusiastic to attend the aarti. That's, aside from the example of a boy and a girl being attracted, which is very mundane, you have to make a big transfer of that to pure love of God. There's the example, we may have examples of devotees attaining spontaneous service. And anyway, this is a prayer for it. So, just as with so many things, that if we don't have it, somebody may say, you should chant with devotion, or you should chant your japa with attention. I say, I don't have that. I can't do that. Well then, pray that you want to have it. And then we may say, I don't even want to have it. Well, then pray that you could want to have it. Wherever you are now, you have to try for and yearn for the next stage. So this is a little bit related to Daruka's example, the example of Daruka with the fanning. In some sense, the idea of executing service to Krishna, which he was doing spontaneously, so and with so much devotion to make it come out right. That reminds me, that helps clarify your objection of the possible misuse of this example, that Daruka was completely fixed on Krishna, and he was face to face with Krishna. He wanted to make sure that he was doing it nicely for Krishna's pleasure, whereas work now, samadhi later, can be lacking in that it wouldn't be. It seems to be in that discussion a duality between somebody just doing his work and somebody thinking of Krishna. But Daruka's work was to think of Krishna as being comfortable. And that, so that's a perfection. That is samadhi. You don't need a separate samadhi. Yeah. Prabhupada said, book distribution is real samadhi. So if you're really doing the thing right, then Krishna is in the picture. You're not just, I got to do my work. It's my work, and I got to make it come out right. I don't care about ecstasies or thinking of Krishna. That's too advanced. I just want to work hard. It is thinking of Krishna through a nice execution of service so that Krishna will be pleased. Because that's my mood. It's my purpose. I'm a servant. So similarly, when you don't have any real love for the thing, then you should at least be aware that that's not desirable, and you pray for that stage. So why did I like this? I guess because it just seemed to ring a bell so much of something that we do desire. So for example, say if you pray, there are songs by Narottam Das Thakur. He expresses his longings. He may say that, I wish that I could wash the lotus feet of Radharani and dry her feet with my hair, and I could be in the body of a gopi. Well, that's amazing. Revelation to hear that a devotee is thinking like that, but I there was no way I could apply that specifically in my life because there's so many steps I have to go before that it would be actually dangerous of me to start thinking like that. But this is a stage I can think of as applying right now. That what are you yearning for? I'm yearning that I could do my service with spontaneous desire. So are there any questions or comments?
That prayer is for spontaneous service. But sometimes when you think in Krishna, the turn and face your deity, to make some prayer, which is something you've had in your head, sometimes like a little spontaneous prayer comes out. So there's prayer for spontaneity, but it's also spontaneous prayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising to me sometimes. Like, I thought I had all my desires all kind of nicely like that, but really I wanted to do things, and I know what I came to pray for. That's amazing.
Well, that's... Yeah, there are different kinds of prayer. Under submission, they're discussed, and one is called making notable prayers. Yeah, reciting notable prayers. And submission is a little different from that, in that it's more... prayers of your own composition. So within that, there might be what you're referring to, that rather than having an official program of what you're going to say to Krishna, first I say this prayer, then I say that prayer, then I ask for this, then I ask for that, you find yourself just asking Krishna. I think we should be very honest. Before God, you should be honest. You can't cheat him or pray for one thing while another thing is in your mind. So, and think he won't know it. So spontaneous. spontaneous prayers is good. Praising Krishna, asking Krishna for service, improvement of our service. What this refers to is just a general and at every minute during our day, a willingness to do our service rather than dragging your feet or being resentful, complaining that, oh, well, this devotee is doing this and how come I don't get this facility or it's too difficult, I don't want to do more. We're all afflicted by those different things. And even we have bodily rhythms. I know at certain times I can read, other times I can't read, and sometimes I feel good, sometimes I don't feel good. And so this the stage of just, you know, free-flowing willingness and good heart, a desire to serve Krishna, is another way to say what this is. Then it's real, you know. We feel that even with people giving us, in our exchanges with people, somebody does it because they really want to do it, to do something for you, or somebody does it not like that. So when we do devotional service to Krishna, that element is very desirable. You could say, until you reach that stage, you're just kind of going through the motions. It's not really doing it. And sometimes somebody comes to the Krishna consciousness movement for so many different motives, like they're just trying to get away from their parents, or they have some, who knows what, and they get attracted to the devotees. But they never really understand what it is, and they never really want to do it. And then at some point they ask themselves, honestly, do you really want to do this? You want to be a devotee of Krishna and serve Krishna? And they say, no, I don't really want to do it. And they stop doing it. So, and then they say, well, what do you want to do? And they have some so-called spontaneous desire that is really impelled by Maya. And then they go and do that instead. And they feel good at first. Well, good. I don't know why I was a devotee. I just thought that I should do this. And so as devotees, we shouldn't do our service out of fear of hell or fear of death or because some authority told us. It's these things, they won't last, but there has to be a real spontaneous desire to do it. So, again, if I ask for questions, you take it to the other extreme or think that it can be balanced and so forth. That's not the real point in presenting examples, to give counterexamples. But they may come to mind and disturb your appreciation of the example. So, but I'm certainly not saying that we shouldn't do Vaidhi Bhakti. That's where we're at. We have to do our service without spontaneous desire. But here's a prayer that while I'm doing it, I got to do my work for Krishna because the spiritual master said so. But I can feel while I'm doing it that I don't have that desire. So I'm longing for that day when I can. I'm not going to quit my service. It's all I've got is the obligation to do it because of my intelligence. But I wish the day would come, Krishna, when I could really offer you service because I want to do it and because I want to please you. Just the way I see a boy is attracted to a girl. Ishan. I made a distinction. I said that there was a simple description in the beginning of Nectar Devotion about spontaneous service, and It just referred to general enthusiasm, which could go on within Vaidhi Bhakti. So, in other words, there are devotees who approach Krishna with awe and reverence, in Vaikuntha even, in liberated stage, and they have plenty of enthusiasm, and they're spontaneous. So it's not like you can't be spontaneous. And so the answer to the first question, that if you naturally approach Krishna with awe and reverence, there's nothing wrong, then you should do that and be enthusiastic and be spontaneous at the same time, that he's so great and I'm so small and he's so opulent, he's so beautiful as the Supreme Lord. Be impressed by his majesty and greatness and serve him enthusiastically. So, but because we are in Lord Chaitanya's line, we keep hearing about Krishna's sweetness too. So it's natural that we start to think of Krishna in that way. But in order to implement that, that takes regular steps of advancement, freedom from all anarthas within. So when we reach that stage, that will also so manifest. Therefore, it's a prayer. We read a prayer for asking the Lord to give us spontaneous desire. But until he does so, and only when he does so will it occur. So I'm referring to two things. One is a general spontaneity, and then is what you're referring to, a spontaneous desire for the serving Krishna in sweetness. In either case, they come from down from Krishna, and the devotee may be aware of his desire to have them. But especially the second kind, he cannot push on his own to start. They come from Krishna. Let me read another one. This is one that is the... I think you probably also recognize the other two. But this one everyone will recognize. It's something we quote a lot. But I didn't want to avoid it just because of familiarity. It's so important. It's a symptom of expecting the Lord's mercy. And Rupa Goswami quotes from the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 8. My dear Lord, any person who is constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him, and who goes on suffering the resultant actions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible to become liberated, for it has become his rightful claim. And then Prabhupada's statement after it. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. So I always thought that was important. I always would remember the page 291, page next to devotion, would often think of it. I won't read the rest of the paragraph, but it has to do with an attitude to take towards suffering that comes in the material world. So there's nobody who doesn't know about this. We all know that we're suffering in this material world, bodily, mentally suffering, so many ways. And these come from misdeeds that we've committed in the past. So devotional service is such a practical thing that it can transform the suffering that we're getting automatically, no shortage of it. It's an opportunity for sadhana bhakti. You don't have to pick up your beads even or go into the temple. All you have to do is be a sufferer. And plenty of course, everyone is a sufferer, but you have to be a sufferer with the right attitude, and lo and behold, you're performing a kind of bhakti. So what is the attitude? That this suffering that I'm going through now, I understand because I'm faithful to the guru, Shastra and Sadhu, and the information that I've done something in my past life, some karma. Prabhupada says this is natural in India. People, by to be born in that culture, they have that automatically. The person will feel that I'm in my particular position, money or lack of money, is suffering, because of it's my karma. I did it in my last life. It's not like an article of recent faith that they've acquired, but they just think like that. So we have to learn to think like that. But because I am following my spiritual master and Krishna, I'm not getting the full sinful reaction. I'm just getting a token of it. So I'd be glad that I'm not getting worse. I could be getting worse than I'm getting now. And then the other thing is, go on with your relationship to Krishna. Certainly don't resent him, but rather make obeisances to Krishna. So this is very pleasing to Krishna, and the Srimad Bhagavatam verse says, whoever thinks like this, he is guaranteed to go back to Godhead, just the way a son is guaranteed to get inherit the wealth from his father. This is one very powerful statement in Nectar Devotion. And it's something that we can practice every day in facing the different sufferings. It's an opportunity when we suffer. And we don't constantly suffer. We suffer and then it goes away. So while it's here, we should think, oh, here it is. Here's that opportunity. They better not blow it. It'll go away. And it's an opportunity for devotional service. If I don't think right about it, then it'll be gone. I'll have wasted it. I've suffered anyway. And I wasted the opportunity to see it in a Krishna-conscious way. Any questions or comments?
It's an old Chinese saying, I try to teach that with the children is that you shouldn't feel guilty about trying to think for yourself. Try and get them to understand why they're doing these things as opposed to being always told.
Yeah.
Quite rightly you were saying that I haven't blast anything.
Yeah.
So it's like what you were saying, that it's like a kind of spontaneity.
Yeah. So this too, and this attitude towards suffering is another example. They can't just do it because they're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
Well, we hear these instructions, and in one sense, in the beginning, I guess that's how we take them. Well, this is what the Shastras say, this is what you're supposed to do. And you hear it, you hear it, and you hear it. And then what we call realization is when you finally do, somehow or other, you adapt it for your own. Then it becomes a realization. So I've read this, and you've heard it many, many times. You've probably preached it to somebody else, that tate nukam pam suksha mikshamano. But then at some point, you enter it, and you realize it, and you make it yours. So that's good that what you say is part of your training of the growing minds of children is, they have to do it with their own surrender, with their own wills, devotional service. Because the teacher isn't always going to be there to ask. If you want to ask him, or to make you do it, in case you don't want to do it, you have to become a devotee yourself.
On that point, this meditation, I was thinking of it. And you said that all in reverence doesn't mean you can't be spontaneous. You can't do anything. It seems like our relationship with the spiritual master is very much like that, in the sense we should be venerable, or he's venerable, we should pay our obeisances, but he's pleased when we start to think what he's a person, how can we serve him, what is he like. I mean, that doesn't necessarily have to relinquish our veneration because our respect, because we're being personal. And in fact, he's encouraged us to be.
Right. Yeah, that's a good example of because the relationship with the spiritual master stays like that. It doesn't become. It stays like a dasya rasa, in friendship. But there's plenty of enthusiasm. We see so many devotees so enthusiastic to serve Prabhupada, but it's with the idea that they're his servant. And I can also link that to what Patri said, a very interesting thought that that children, and children or all of us, should think for ourselves, not just because somebody told us. But another way to look at that is that, in one sense, we never give up doing something in order to please the spiritual master because he told us to do it, and we want to please him. So, but that has to become spontaneous. It's not like, well, you're supposed to follow your guru or the other disciples, they're following the guru, so I should look like I'm into it too. Now, I follow Prabhupada, I want to look like I'm a good disciple. But somehow you have to actually do it. You have to accept the spiritual master in your heart and want to serve him and want to please him, not artificially. And when you really do accept him, then that's like, not contradictory, but it's another aspect of things, that it's not just that you think for yourself, but you think, well, the real reason I want to do this is because I want to please my spiritual master. That's also complete in itself. But that has to be spontaneous. Then you have to ask yourself, well, why do you want to please your spiritual master? And then there should come nice feelings. Well, he did so much for me, and I love him, and so on and so forth. That's another aspect. Manu, did you want to say something?
I think he made one example in class about a Prabhupada's Jinnah was saying, be spontaneous. You know, he was like, it was a contradiction, but he was saying that that's what we should be. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'll do what he says. Like when devotees say, Prabhupada, what would please you the most? He said that you love Krishna, that you become a pure devotee. So that's an order that you can take your whole life to try to realize that I must try to develop spontaneous stage, because he would want me to do this. He wants me to not be an automaton, but to think for myself and be a real person and give my whole self to Krishna. He wants that. So it's still within obeying a spiritual master. But it's like the difference between a child... He just, all he can obey is what he's told, and then somebody else knows the deeper mission and thinks on his own what to do, and sometimes adds new things that were not specifically taught by the father or the spiritual master, but are in his mood. Like Prabhupada said, his spiritual master told him, you go to the West and preach to English-speaking people. So he did that, and then Prabhupada said, my going back to India and deciding to preach to the Indians and to build temples there and everything, he said, that was my own contribution to the Sampradaya. My spiritual master didn't specifically tell me to do that. But of course, it was for the glory of his spiritual master. It's not that at some stage you become independent. That would be a catastrophe. I had one more. Yes, well, I'll just introduce this to remind you of a nice section of Nectar Devotion. It's called Character of One in Ecstatic Love. And after hearing some of these involuntary states of ecstasy that overcome a devotee when he's serving, and we've also heard how they come to people who may be more emotional, and also they come when there are some outright cheaters who just show these emotions so that people will think that they're devotees. So it all becomes rather questionable. We hear that sometimes devotees who are in this stage, like Lord Chaitanya, he would restrain himself because he didn't want to have these emotions in front of other people. And so circumstantially, qualified devotees will not manifest them, and unqualified devotees will manifest them. But then we come to this chapter that tells about some qualities I think Prabhupada somewhere calls them steady, qualities of steady ecstasy. And I've always read this, not as something that I've already attained, but as something that I can really think about. Like I can't so much think about, you know, how will I come to the stage of having my hair stand on end and this and that body manifestation. But here's the things that I can practice. And there were 9 of them. And actually we read one of them. We just discussed one of them. It was always expecting Krishna's mercy. And I told how we could do that when we suffer. So I'm just going to mention one more of them. Practice it. The executives, all these different executive books tell about this time management. So the real time management in bhakti is not just efficiency of to make the most money or something, but to at least be always engaged in Krishna's service. Time is a limited thing that we have, is very valuable. You cannot get a minute back after you spend it or misspend it for $1 million if you had. So for the time being, this constant opportunity of flowing moments and hours and days is a great loss if we don't use them. The other example I gave, I said that we have suffering. It's the given thing. If you have the right attitude towards suffering, it turns into devotional service. So here's something else. It's even more comprehensive. Time. Because within time there's suffering and there's joy and all. Everything is within time. So all you have to do is use your time, and all the time, in some kind of devotional service and be aware of it. That it can be expressed in a kind of negative way of ecstasy. That I'm not spending my time properly. I'm anxious. I shouldn't lose my time. I have to use my time rightly. This is a good attitude to have, rather than think, do a little service, and then I won't do some service, or I'll just space out, or I'll sleep, I'll act in such a way that I'm out of commission, or I get into a bad attitude for 3 days, and I overeat, I do a lot of prajalpa, and then I think, oh boy, I guess I get back into my service, and all this time is being, you don't care about the time that's being wasted. So I guess the beginning stage would be to not to feel good about these big wastes of time, but say, there it was again. I just blew it. I just wasted about 3 or 4 hours. I could have been serving Krishna in one way or another. I just spent it. I was completely angry all that time, or I was just unconscious. I let myself get into this, and it's not so easy. It's not like you waste 3 hours and then you just go snap and you're back into devotional service. But if you deliberately waste 3 hours, it's going to take a while to get over that and get back into devotional service. So time, staying in the good consciousness, in this sattva-gun, using the time in Krishna's service, is a symptom of bhava. And there are 9 of these symptoms, which, are, as I say, we can study them in a practical way. So that's a little dip in the nectar devotion. Any comments on the time or on any other things?
No. On the question about which is more important, meditating on Krishna or serving, it would seem a nice follow on if you're thinking about Krishna or the spiritual master, but you want to do something for them.
Yeah.
So not exactly airtight, separated compartments.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like that expression you said, if you're thinking about Krishna or the spiritual master, you want to do service. Prabhupada gives that expression as the difference between Santa Rasa and Dasya, or how one, by more affection, one goes to the next stage. So Santa Rasa is just thinking that Krishna is so sublime, meditating on the spiritual reality of Krishna, of God, and that I do have a relationship with him. It is a sublime meditation. Takes you completely out of the material nonsense, just thinking about God. Well, if God is so wonderful, as you're meditating on him, does he have a cause? Is there something that he would like done? Yes, there is. So then you move into that. So the bhakti meditation is like, it sort of implies, it includes I won't say getting off your duff and doing something, but Prabhupada almost puts it that way. He says, you know, meditation, that's for the nonsense. That he can't do anything good. Naughty boy, sit down. At least you sit down and stop your nonsense. But if he's a good boy, then okay, bring the wood here, now do this, and you can engage him in something. But yeah, he says, meditation is for the nonsense. You can hear Prabhupada lecturing on the yoga system. But so the devotee thinks of Krishna and then he wants to do something for Krishna. So therefore his doing is not different than his meditating. But we're highly suspicious of somebody being able to maintain that, even that meditation, without doing something. How can he do it in this age? Arjuna said, I can't do that. I'm an active person. I couldn't control the mind, just think of Krishna. Give me some service. And Krishna said, actually, you're the best meditator. But we do have our sitting down meditation, 2 hours a day, we should do that. Not say, I'm not going to meditate on my beads, I'll go and do something else. That much, and then you can do other service. That meditation comes first. I told you that, though. I'll end with this little story that I was giving a lecture and somebody, I was talking about 16 rounds or something in Prabhupada, and so someone said, does anybody know whether Prabhupada chanted 16 rounds? And I didn't know for sure. Any example? So Prabhupada's long-time personal servant, Srutakirti, was there. So he said, I remember a story. He said, I was sitting opposite Prabhupada in his room, and he was chanting on his beads, and he chanted to the completion of a round, and then he moved his beads. And he said, now I have chanted 16 rounds. I can do any damn thing I want. So that gives a relationship of the chanting, meditation as first. I think he was not. He was sort of expressing the neophyte devotee attitude. All right. But we sometimes think, not in a bad way. Well, it's not so great either. But we're chanting, and then we're thinking, well, I'll soon be finished my rounds, then I can go, I want to do this other service. So that eagerness is good to do the other service, but it shouldn't overwhelm the japa as insignificant, so I can do some real service. It's only 2 hours. Yeah.
The more purified the senses become, the more efficient they are in serving Krishna.
Yeah.
And that sometimes when chanting, it tries to think like that. Yeah, well, I'm only looking for doing the service.
Yeah.
But that efficiency will come from what I'm doing now.
Yeah, right. And especially if you're preaching to people, why don't you come to Krishna consciousness, then how can you... One of the first things we preach to them is that they should start doing this every day. They should chant their rounds. And in effect, they're asked, well, do you do that? And you say, yeah, but then you think, if I really did it, then I could preach to this person better. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.